Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Again, welcome to Industrial Talk, the place, this platform that celebrates industry heroes such as yourself. You are bold, you are brave. You dare greatly, you innovate, you changing lives, you're changing the world, you're solving problems, why not celebrate you? That's how I geek out each and every day. Thank you very much for what you do. All right, in the hot seat, we have a gentleman by the name of Shamik Mehta. Now, if I go out to his handy dandy stat card, he is the director of industry solutions marketing with Hitachi Vantara. Done a lot of work with Hitachi Vantara. Great people, great company, always dedicated to solving problems. Love it. We're going to be talking utilities. Now, you know, I'm always geeking out. My background, utilities, climbing towers, setting poles, doing what I did with Southern California Edison and enjoyed every moment. So I geek out on this stuff. So just, you know, buckle in because we're going to have a great time. Let's get cracking with the conversation. Of course, I just love this stuff. There's a lot of great challenges out there within the utility space, this digital transformation. What do we do? How do we support the future going forward? How do we create a stable grid? How do we solve problems so that we can, you know, be more renewable, whatever it might be? Whatever that focus needs to be, we've got to have a really nimble type of grid to be able to handle all of these wonderful ideas and thinking out there that are being brought to you by those Hitachi Vantara and other companies that are pushing the envelope, innovative. They're going to solve the problem so that when you flip that light switch on, light comes on. You don't have to worry about it flickering or doing anything. That's what they bring to the table. Before I get a cracking on that, couple of things. One, I just came back from Denver. And if you've never been to Denver, great people. Yes. Good food? Absolutely. Beautiful? Woo! Baby, we climbed a mountain. But they have some great companies out there with great people. And I was very fortunate, very honored, very excited to be able to work with a company called Cap Logistics. Now, you know as well as I do, you've got logistics, you've got the supply chain challenges, you've got sourcing issues, you've got all of that wrapped up into what do? How do we solve some of the problems? Cap Logistics is a company that is right at the edge trying to figure this out. And they've got the street cred to prove it, right? They've got the street cred. Cap Logistics, a great company. So they opened some doors for me to be able to meet with some great leaders within the Denver, Colorado area. And I want to just give a shout out to the Water Design Build Council. So I was able to meet with them. And you know what they're talking about? Yeah, water. They're talking about solving problems. They're talking about addressing the issues that we have today, right? Today, because, well, between you and me, one, we take the water for granted. Two, right, when we pull it out of the tap, we just know that it's, you know, going to be okay. Water Design Build Council wants to keep that moving forward, working with some great engineering firms to make that happen, talking about and solving problems that are impacting water today. The next one is the Colorado Business Roundtable. It is made up of professionals within the Colorado area, big-time professionals, again, looking at ways of being able to solve problems, collaborating, innovation, you name it, educating. It's happening there. The executive director, Debbie Brown, is an incredible leader, making wonderful solutions available with this particular organization, working closely with them. She's got a passion to definitely solve problems. And again, we collaborate, right? We collaborate because we do not have all the answers. And the Colorado Business Roundtable definitely has made that a point. The other one was a fun trip to Whistling Hair Distillery. This is a business that was developed by a gentleman by the name of Sandy Roth. His pedigree is Deloitte. He was with them forever. You go out to Whistling Hair, get the tour, see the passion. It's like mad scientists, all of the stuff. Incredible, incredible opportunity. And of course, a decent product. No, a really good product, beyond decent. They are passionate. It's fun seeing them talk about what they do. The one that I geeked out probably the most is with the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. So I met with George Sparks. He is the executive director there, and it's a museum, right? I love learning. I love. And what they're trying to do and what they're working on is to be able to pull in what's happening in the community and reflect that in the museum. What is important to people in the community, and how do we continue to educate? How do we continue to develop insights to, you know, for a better tomorrow? They just, I'm telling you, a guy that like me that'll go to a museum, you're looking at a guy that just gets all squiffy and just loves that stuff. That's the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. You got to go out there. You got to just do it. Go to Denver because it's pretty cool. And then finally, I was able to meet with a young lady by the name of Michelle Barnes, head of HHS, talked a little bit about what's happening within the Denver, Colorado state as a whole. What are they doing? How are they doing it? She's got a lot of passion. It's just pretty bright. So there's a lot of wonderful conversations that had taken place in Colorado. Again, very appreciative to Cap Logistics for giving me the opportunity to meet with all of these wonderful, wonderful professionals in the Denver area. One last thing, because we're always about this. No, two last things. One, the Manufacturing Technology Show, Cleveland, Ohio. Been to Cleveland, wonderful community. This is November 9th through the 11th. You can be there in person. There's a virtual, boom. You just got to be there because manufacturing is being impacted by digital transformation each and every day. Must know more. And then finally, Industrial Talk 2.0 is getting, we're getting closer every day. This is going to be your single location to all things industry. Go there, find out more. Ping on into whoever you want to talk to. It's all going to be available. My role, Industrial Talks role, and the team Industrial Talks role is to make it easy for you to get the information you need to be successful because we want you to survive, we want you to rebuild, and we want you to prosper because you are that important because you're changing the world. Woo! That was a hell of an intro. Big time. All right, let's get back to this conversation that we're having in geeky utility stuff. Shamik, I really had a great time talking to you. You're going to enjoy this conversation because it's nice to see companies like Hitachi Vantara really put toward the effort to try to solve problems. And there are other companies out there. And it is incumbent upon us to be able to highlight and be able to celebrate these individuals. Shamik does not, and I mean does not, disappoint. His last name is M-E-H-T-A. His stat card is out there. Meta is the way you say that last name. And reach out to him. Oh, yeah. MIT, too. So, you know, he's quite the smart guy. All right, enjoy the conversation. Shamik, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I am looking forward to this particular conversation. Shamik and myself and others, and I can't say others, you'll be listening to it. We're going to be talking about bidirectional data flow. This is a utility-centric, this is a power-centric, this is a grid-centric type of conversation. And I want to make sure that everybody out there, the listeners out there, recognize that this is a real important topic, has real ramifications, and I think that there are real solutions, and that's what Shamik and Hitachi Vantara bring to the table. All right, Shamik. How about that, man?
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. This is exciting.
Excellent.
I love it.
Give us a little background on who you are.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm Shamik Mehta. I am a director of industry solutions marketing at Hitachi Vantara. I'm based here in sunny California in the Bay Area. Our headquarters are in Santa Clara for Hitachi Vantara. That's where we are, remote, as always, as you can tell from behind me. And staying busy with a lot of activities in data management and understanding how utilities and oil and gas and energy industries are evolving, how our grid is getting modern and more communicative with each other, how electrification is evolving everywhere, and how can technologies and software help ease that problem. My background is in renewable energy. I worked for 6 years in a company called Sun Edison, which was a very large IPP, or independent power producer.
Sun Edison. What do they do? What type of assets do they have?
So Sun Edison is a solar and wind IPP. Solar and wind independent power producer. So yeah. They invented the power purchase agreement, if you know what that is.
Yeah, so that's where you negotiate ISO4s, ISO3s, okay. ISO1s. Yeah, firm contracts, as available contracts. I know a little bit about them.
Awesome. Then, well, we are on the same page. But Sun Edison did that, and it was a very large, up to a 3-gigawatt pipeline of solar and wind and energy storage projects around the world, where I was the director of operations for our battery-based energy storage products. I did product management, product marketing for everything from heterogeneous transistor cells, HJT cells, that go into the modules or the panels, as they're called, to the microinverters on the back of the panels, to single-axis trackers that hold the machines that point the panels at the sun and track it around for 20% extra gain. And then energy storage systems with lithium-ion batteries and a controller and inverters and everything all built in to augment and, you know, flatten out or beef up the shoulders when the sun starts to dip with energy storage or when wind starts to die down. So it's been a fascinating run.
Listeners, I understand. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. However, this is an interesting conversation. Were you familiar with Solar One down in Daggett?
Yes.
And that was those are interesting. That's an interesting technology because, to your point, they're tracking the sun, shining it up on a collector. And I think at that particular time, the last iteration was salt, melting salt, so that they can generate steam at night.
Yes. CSP, concentrated solar power.
There you go.
And it was parabolic mirrors that were used to, I mean, if you fly over Las Vegas, you can see those giant fields where they're aggregating, right? They're all the mirrors are reflecting and collecting into a single collector. And that is used to get so hot that it melts the molten salt and other gases, and it creates energy storage out of it. It's pretty fascinating.
It is. And bright. That's
very bright.
You can see it extremely from a long way away.
Yes, you can.
Again, I gotta go around that sound. It's when they were. I remember as a younger man watching them getting to the focus. So they're taking those mirrors. Focusing them not on the collector, but up above it. Right.
Yeah.
It would just be this white spot in the air.
Yes. It's amazing. But you know, the great thing is we've barely tapped into the power of the sun. Did you know that every minute the Earth gets enough photon energy from the sun to power our entire world's energy needs for an entire year? In 1 minute, we get enough energy from the photon, from all the photons that hit us from the sun, to power our entire world's energy needs for 1 year.
I've never heard that. That's amazing.
Think about that.
That's a stat.
Exactly. I was at a conference where Elon Musk was talking, and he said that if you were to take 1/8 of the state of Nevada and turn it into solar panels, you can power the world.
No way.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one either. That's stunning too.
It's incredible how much the sun has.
Wow. See. Okay. A conversation to talk about later, because I'm telling you right now that's an interesting and staggering stack. I mean, I'm just telling you that's there's plenty of room out there in Vegas too. They could probably do it.
Yes,
big time. All right, let's talk a little bit about when I was a utility lineman, when I was in utilities, the model, the actual power model, power gen, grid, utility model is pretty basic, pretty straightforward. Big thermal generating assets, transmission lines, substations, and so on. As time has gone on, we used to negotiate power purchase agreements, and we used to bring online assets that were considered alternative. Now, were they efficient? Nah, some were not. It just is what it is. But we had to begin to address and recognize that these generation sorts are on the grid, and we always had trouble with wind, VAR sucking, stable grid challenges, all of the stuff in the San Gorgonio Pass, Tehachapi, and we had to figure something out. Fast forward to today, where you stand, where we stand, and where we talk about digital transformation, the journey, and how it's impacting the utility. What is the utility, the grid, the people dealing with today with that reality? And how are we going to solve that problem? It's going to happen. Yeah. It is happening. What do we do?
It is happening. We call that decentralization and diversification. And what that means is you, like you rightly said, energy used to be, or still is, generated in a nuclear power plant or at a hydro dam or at a large facility somewhere, usually very far away from a city or where the people who need that electricity reside. And then that electricity is transmitted over, you know, high tension cables alongside highways that you see everywhere at 122,000, 140,000 volts and transferred thousands or tens of thousands of miles to, and then distributed and broken down into smaller and smaller steps with transformers and other HVDC equipment, high voltage DC equipment. And then eventually they'll come to your home at a 120 volt range, right? But it's a long journey that those, that electron took from a nuclear plant or a dam somewhere in the Sierras in California, for example, to where I live here in Silicon Valley. That's a traditional model of electricity generation, transmission, distribution, and consumption by the end user, me, right? That's what they call the energy value chain. Today, it's becoming less and less disruptive because what's happening is people are realizing that you can generate energy cleanly closer to where it's going to be consumed. So your solar rooftops or a parking lot or a college or a school or a large Home Depot type of a box store where the roofs are viable, you can put a lot of solar panels and generate electricity where it's going to be consumed. So that traditional model of generating electricity from far and transmitting and distributing it down to the retail level has changed significantly and is undergoing even faster change as we speak.
See, what's interesting in a way we've sort of painted the historical picture is that the value chain was one, it's almost like just one direction. It's like big, cut it in half, cut it down all the way down to the consumer level where we can just, right, you know, run that blender. And that's, I can follow that. And, mm-hmm, and things on the other side of the transformer, it wasn't going the other way. Now, when we start talking about now, we're going back. Yeah. If I have a solar planner, I can pump it back into, yes, the grid.
Yes.
That's where the problem, absolutely, lies, right?
Right. So, and utilities for the most part, especially in the USA, have done a very good job of honoring that power, the distributed power that's been generated. Not everywhere, but for the most part, it works quite well. So for here in California, for example, our utilities will allow us to give rebates to customers whose meters run backwards. And that's literally what happens. In the middle of the day, solar panels in my house may generate 5 to 7 kilowatts of energy. But if nobody's home, the home is barely consuming about a kilowatt or maybe 3 kilowatts, depending upon air conditioning and, you know, refrigeration needs. But there's no lighting, there's no fans, there's nothing else really happening. There's no electric charging of cars because the cars have gone to work with the owners. So when that happens, the excess energy can be pumped back into the grid and the meter literally reverses. You remember the old style meters, which had disc that spun on it, right?
Yeah.
And as the more electricity you use, the faster it turns, and it's your bill is measured based upon those revolutions it took. Well, literally the meters would slow down to the point that they turn reverse and the disc spins backwards because now your home is generating electricity and giving it back to the grid. And when that happens, utilities often will give you credit for that. Doesn't happen everywhere, but in the more progressive states, they will pay you back for that money, which is fantastic because now you have electricity flowing in both directions. And with smart meters, electronic meters, which has got instrumentation in it, a combination of computers, a combination of wireless internet connectivity and power or battery power, is enough to power that information about how much energy is being used and how much of energy is being pushed back into the grid. And all of that is available now in real time.
But it has to be done in real time. I mean, if I'm
if I'm
a utility and I'm trying to, you know, I'm pretty simple in matching my supply and my demand.
Right.
I've got to have the right amount of, you know, electrons meeting the right amount of demand and being able to balance that any more, any less. But that model that you just spoke of requires that quick insight, right?
Yes, it has to. You need to know right away, because what happens when suddenly somebody comes home and plugs in their EV charger because the EV came home from work a little bit early? All of a sudden, that demand and the amount of current that's going back into the grid needs to reverse itself. And it creates a new suck on the grid. Now, most EV charged car makers, for example, know that after 11 p.m. at night is when the rates are going to be the lowest.
Yeah,
right?
That's a terrible.
Now, if you've heard about something called the duck curve, the duck curve talks about how, if you look at the outline, it shows about how energy demands rise as people wake up around 6 o'clock in the morning and lights turn on and coffee makers and microwaves turn on, fridge doors are open and closed. Then it drops about 9-10 o'clock at night in the morning by when people have left their homes and gone to work. And then in the evening, when people come back around 4 to 5 PM and as when they turn on the microwaves and cooking appliances and lights go on and all of that, that's when there's a sudden ramp of power. And that's called the duck curve's neck of the duck. And between 4 to 9 p.m. is when the load on the grid is highest. There's also, unfortunately, the time when the sun solar panels are beginning to produce less and wind energy is beginning to die down.
Yeah.
Right? So the demand is rising like crazy, whereas the supply is constrained. So that neck of the duck as the consumption rises is often when the utilities are forced to charge you a higher price. And that makes perfect sense from their perspective. But imagine if in the middle of the day, when the solar panels on their home were shining and it was not being used, you could have stored that in a battery.
Yeah.
And just out of those 4 hours in the evening between 4 to 9, if you could have used those batteries for some of your critical appliances, it eases the grid a lot.
See, that's a natural conclusion. If that is the case, that duck neck reality, you're absolutely spot on about solar production going down. That's when the sun is at a really lower angle. And then, of course, wind, it just sort of lets up. But
that's right.
But that is a battery storage solution.
Correct. Good. And battery storage now have wheels on them. Your cars are essentially energy storage devices, but they're mobile. So it's a little miniature power plant that can go to various parts in a city at various times. It can be charged at various rates, often free. Have you seen those carports and schools and other places and colleges?
Let me paint this picture. So if that's a battery on wheels, I come home, I'm at 4 o'clock, I plug my handy dandy car in, it starts discharging, and I've already plugged it, or I've already charged it up with, well,
free power. Solar at work.
That's
free,
right?
Solar at work, right?
And I'm using it. That's an efficient way of extracting that energy.
Exactly. Because if you put energy, you'd increasingly see that canopies over parking lots increasingly have electric chargers right below it, and no time limits on them either, because you can park it there as long as you like. And those panels over there are producing enough energy to charge a car literally for free.
Huh.
I mean, the owners of the parking lot may not decide to give it to you for free. They may charge you some nominal rate, but it doesn't really cost you much to charge the car. So if in the middle of the day you park under a carport which has solar panels on it, you can charge your car for free. So by the time you get home, you don't have a discharged car. You have a semi or a fully charged car.
Yeah.
Now you park the car in the house and you plug it into your charger. And instead of you charging the car, it doesn't need to. It actually discharges the car to ease that duck neck problem for just a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And then after 11 o'clock at night, when the demand has died down, you can charge your car at that point.
Yeah. and see what you're talking about. That's the innovation that is available out there. That that is when we start talking about the digital component and the analytics that are necessary. But it's also you've got the technology to do that. That does it.
It does. And, you know, if you think about it, what do you really need for something like this to happen? You need the automation. You need people to remember to plug in and not have to worry about, hey, if I plug my car in, I don't want it to start charging now. I want to program it to start charging after midnight or after 11 p.m. When the rates are the lowest too. But all of this requires real-time information coming from millions of EVs and carports and charging stations and smart meters. And can you imagine? This is all data management.
Yeah, I don't know how. You bring up a good point. This is just one example at one home with one power profile. Now, multiply that by a million plus, right?
Correct.
Then you've got a utility that built off of a very simple structure, having to deal with a dynamic, complex environment. Kudos to those folks. Kudos, because the lights still go on with all of that happening today.
I think our utilities in the entire country are doing a really good job. They are essentially dealing with a tough problem.
Yeah.
We don't really have power shortages or outages in our country. We have a lot of talk about how our grid is old and how it's dilapidated and under budgeted. Yes, okay, many of those criticisms are valid. But if you think about it, how many times have you lost power? In my 30 years of living in Silicon Valley, I must have lost power for a total of about less than 10 times. And only one of those lasted 24 hours. And it was because of the proactive shutdown because of the wildfire danger caused by high winds that made that 24-hour outage happen. Otherwise, in spite of the grid being its age of 60 years of old, I haven't really had any brownouts or blackouts. So the grid actually managed really well.
You're spot on. I'm telling you, I agree with you 100%. And when you paint that picture of how there's this brave new world, this future that's happening, it's happening today, but it's going to continue to evolve, continue to push that envelope, and continue to change our lives. We still take it for granted. A story, a side note. When I was with the utility, an old lineman came to me and said, "Scott, we used to have little interruptions, right? Little pops, nothing big." And the majority of the people didn't know. They just didn't know. The real problem came is when everybody had digital clocks, and then it would just quickly interrupt, and then all of a sudden it just started blinking.
That's how I
walked to the house and they go, "Hey, we had a power outage. I didn't feel it, but we had a power outage." And then the phones start ringing off the hook, and then that's when it became a real problem.
That's right. It's the same thing today too. My microwave starts blinking 12, like the old VCR from 1984, and that's how I know we had a power outage. I never felt it.
No, not at all. And again, that's a testament to the innovation that is taking place today within utilities and companies like Hitachi Vantara. I mean, it just is, because without that, without companies like Hitachi Vantara and others, these problems, the benefits of what we're trying to accomplish from an energy production perspective can only be realized and achieved through the innovation and capabilities of companies like Hitachi Vantara and you and others.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it takes a few decades of having built the equipment ourselves, like the transformers and the substation circuit breakers and the high voltage equipment and everything else, and then learning from how they behave over time. We've been equipping our own buildings materials with IoT sensors and collecting data from how hot they get, how much they vibrate, what does the oil analysis inside the transformer look like. And we've been doing that for such a long time that we've built this AI models, artificial intelligence models around it, to learn how to detect an upcoming anomaly or a failure. So we can now take that knowledge and we can export that and we can help other people understand what that is. And that's exactly what we do. It's all science. It's science about the hardware that we then merge into software intelligence and make it available anywhere, anytime in the cloud.
See, that's a powerful statement, because what you're talking about is that history, having that historical data, wrapped around weather, whatever it might be, trends, demands, growth, whatever the impact mm-hmm. of that electron taking place, and you have that, and then you apply it using that data analytics science, apply it to an AI, put it in a software, you've already, in essence, you've already just gotten to the point where you only can gain from that, right?
Yes.
You just become smarter. You just become exactly. better.
Yeah, absolutely. So we think about the flow of electrons, which is now bidirectional, as we just discussed, as every electron representing a bit of data. There's information in every electron.
Jeez.
So whether the electron is moving into your house or out, you just learned something. That movement of the electron that is now going in two directions is the bidirectional data. That knowledge is important. Yes. It's not just important for me to reduce my bills. It's important for the grid. It's important for the utilities. It's important for the people who generate our power. It's important for them then to know where to put the next power plant and what should it consist of and what should the next price be for the energy. All of that matters. Data matters.
Data matters, man. This is, I want to make sure, listeners, this is important stuff. This is fascinating stuff. You might not think so. You might not be in the world of energy, utility. You might be manufacturing. It impacts you. It impacts you in a way that you might not see today, but it will be tomorrow. And thank goodness for company. Let me ask you this. Two questions. One, what are the roadblocks? What are the challenges? And then where do you see it going? We've already painted. We've done the past. We've done the present. Let's talk about the future and roadblocks.
Right. So roadblocks. It's difficult for, if I were an energy utility, to figure out where I can spend my precious dollars for infrastructure updates. They need a good amount of foresight into where to update that next transformer because they do not know what's going to fail. A lot of the transformers and circuit breakers and everything that has been installed have been installed 40 years ago, 50 years ago, over vast distances and often in very rural areas where it's not easy to always send people. It's working fine, but they do not have the insight into whether that equipment is working great or whether it's time to replace it.
Don't you have the ability from, let's say, dissolved gases? Let's say you take that generation or the transformer analogy. Aren't we gaining greater insights into what is a breakdown in the core of transformers and then be able to a certain extent, have some sort of predictive curve to say, we're looking here and it is, you know, spinning off whatever dissolved gases, whatever. Don't we have a better insights into our assets?
We do, but I think we only have them on a fraction of the transformers that are out there because the older ones do not have the connectivity built into them.
Yes,
right. So you got to go and update all of them, either by changing the transformer to a newer one, which has got this connectivity built into it, or you got to attach external sensors and modules that can capture that information and transmit it via a cell tower because they're often in a location where there is no Wi-Fi available.
Yeah.
That adds expense. And when you talk about tens of thousands of transformers under just one utility's purview, if you combine that with the 300 utilities we have in our country, that becomes a real problem. So while we're getting that,
yep.
It's a modernization of the equipment that needs to happen. So one of the first roadblocks is
You
need to. There has to be a way to quickly get our existing hardware and infrastructure power equipment to transmit that information to us. And there's no short answer to that. You can either go out and retrofit all of these, or better yet, you wait for them to start failing or dying. And when you know that they are, through observation that you can do remotely using a drone, for example, you can then go and decide that we need to update this guy, not the other one that's same age, but it's not being used as much or is not going through as many stress cycles because of better weather conditions or whatever. And you don't need to update the other one. But having that insight into knowing which transformer or which switchgear I may need to update in the next few years is key. And the way they're doing that also is fascinating. They fly drones equipped with heat sensing cameras or LiDAR
on it.
And you can fly them and you can capture the images from them. And those images, guess what? You need an AI algorithm to understand those images because if you have a bunch of interns looking at those photographs trying to figure out if this is a good transformer or a bad bushing, you're never going to get there.
Yeah, never.
Right? Our local utility analyzed 1.2 million images last year alone in Northern California alone.
Oh, God, that's funny. Jeez. Okay, so where do I spend my money? You paint an interesting picture. It is that how do I modernize my infrastructure the right way to deploy the right capital at the right time? Now, where's this future going? What do you see? How come? Why should I not be bullish, or why should I be bullish on this particular future?
You should be bullish, because what's going to happen is you're going to have homes and clusters of homes act like their own power companies for a few hours a day. So if I have an EV and my neighbor has an EV and the one next to him has an EV and I've got five electric vehicles in this road or battery-based power wall type of products on my walls, which are energy storage devices, I can theoretically aggregate all of them. And now I have my block of homes as a mini virtual power plant.
Yeah.
So if I take all my cars that are charged, all of them come home and all of them have a combined capacity, that's now enough to power my block for just 2 hours. My grid doesn't have to bother about providing me power on a hot day for 2 hours. That's a huge relief to them. There has to be some monetization around it. So you got to figure out a way to compensate the car owners who are allowing their cars to discharge into the house and allow my neighbor to borrow energy from my car today, right? So there has to be a peer-to-peer way of compensating people. The utility has to get in on it. The car maker has to get in on it. And it's already happening because the car maker is willing to share that information or allow their inverters to be updated so that energy doesn't just go into the car as it is today. So the inverters have to be bi-directional. So the cars have to change a little bit. Oftentimes, it's just a software change in the car. It's not a big technical problem. But the way that affects the battery charge and discharge cycles and the life of the battery, the warranty considerations, all of that sounds like it's a tough problem, but it's not. People are already solving it. People like us are already helping merge that auto cloud with the grid cloud and let people, consumers, have the choice of opting in for that service, working with their utility and others.
That's a wild future. I'm just, as an old utility guy, having this conversation and listening to what you say. I mean, as a homeowner, to have the thought of saying, yeah, but my neighborhood's just part of this cluster and we're just dandy and we've contractually put it all together and now we're spinning and moving and doing this and hey, look at that, man, it's costing me whatever. That is an amazing reality. And it's going to happen.
Because it's going to happen.
People like you and others. Because you keep thinking about innovative ways of making power. We just take it for granted. We just do. It's just something that we just do. Now, how do people get a hold of you?
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. Shamik Mehta at LinkedIn. Or Shamik.Mehta@HitachiVentara.com. And I'll be happy to talk to anybody further about this ad nauseum. I love this space.
Oh, hey, you indicated that you had a couple of slides. Do you think you can offer it up for these fine listeners just as a download, a simple download?
I can.
So
why don't I do one thing? Why don't I send them over to you and then you can add them to this presentation if you like. And that might be the best way. I'd rather not share a slide right now. It just makes it seem so dry and pitchy. I'm not that.
You're on it, man. All right. You got it right there.
But HitachiVentara.com.
Yeah, he spells his name M-E-H-T-A. So make sure that. Mehta is how you say it. S-H-A-M-I-K is the way he spells his first name. Shamik. Straightforward. You, my friend, are a rock star.
You are.
Yeah. Look at that.
Thanks for having me. This is incredible.
Best right here. All right, listeners, we're going to have everything out there on Industrial Talk. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. You fear not, you're going to be able to find all the contact information there. So stay tuned.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, two words, Shamik Mehta. Hitachi Ventara is the company. They are doing great things. They are solving problems each and every day. People like Shamik and others on team Hitachi Ventara, pretty much making my life better. I know that they're going to make your life better as well. This is a brave new food future. They understand the need to innovate. They understand the need to collaborate. Reach out to Shamik on his stack card. Let's say LinkedIn, baby. You will not be disappointed. All right. As you can see on the video, I'm sort of making sure that people are share, not really sharing, but just supporting these individuals. So please, industrial professionals need your support. They are trying to do everything that they can to make our lives better. So please subscribe, follow, do whatever is necessary on the social platforms. As you can see by the video, I had that popped up. So go out to Industrial Talk. Find us out there on all of the platforms. All right. Be bold, be brave. Dare greatly. You're going to change the world. Thank you very much for joining. We're going to have another great interview right around the corner.